action!
Welcome to Cinema Verbi, where we're talking about movies you love and the seeds of God's Word planted in them. I'm Father Matt.
And I'm Father Brian.
We're priests of the Archdiocese of Detroit, and we love going to the movies and talking about what we see. Thanks for joining us.
So butter some popcorn, grab a pop, kick your feet back, and let's discover what's found between the silver screen and the sacred. Welcome, Father Matt.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be back, to be here.
Here we are.
We've seen a lot of movies. The way that we've recorded the podcast, it's been a little bit of a gap.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to catch up on.
Lot that's come out in the year, a lot to that's worth talking about, and obviously we try to start these episodes with filling in some movies that won't get an entire episode devoted to them, but just letting listeners know what's out there and what's maybe worth seeing or maybe what's worth skipping.
Yes, and then there's a lot of movies that even this is we're recording this at the end of 2024, so there's even more movies that are going to be coming out very soon. A lot of big Oscar contenders that we haven't seen yet. That are going to be out soon.
They're
one
on
of them
the list.
That we saw the original recently.
Yes. So one of the movies we saw recently was the sequel to Gladiator. Gladiator 2. Gladiator. Yeah, I don't know how you make
Gladiator,
that.
More Gladiator.
Yeah.
With like even, no, to achieve the fulfillment of Gladiator, he's gladiatored.
He has gladiatored.
Gladiatored, yeah. Yes.
Actually, one of my favorite parts of the movie was in the opening title when the I in the middle of the word gladiator, which is the Roman numeral for one, like split and made a two because it was the sequel.
One thing even that before you jump in, so I saw this movie early because it's part of our movie theater that we go to. Every once in a while, you can see a movie in advance before the release, and they don't tell you what it is, and you really just walk into the movie theater and wait for the title to roll, and it was incredibly obvious that it was going to be Gladiator 2.
Obvious to you, but not everybody you said in the theater, right?
But then as soon as we sit in the movie theater, they don't say anything, it doesn't say anything on your ticket,
right.
But you see ancient Rome, you see the Colosseum, and nobody responds at all, which I'm thinking like, oh, okay, it is Gladiator. Let's start clapping.
Nope.
And no response. And then eventually they run the title, Gladiator, and then everyone breaks out into applause. I'm like, come on. You had to have seen that coming.
Not everyone in that theater has a movie podcast, Father Matt. In the know, in the biz as you are. So I liked it. It's not the original. It's never going to be the original, the Russell Crowe original. But I thought it was good. Some good action sequences. It was shot well. Thought the acting was good. Kind of a new Gladiator for a new generation. The story I don't think was as epic or maybe as moving as the first one. So, but for an action movie, for like a sword and sandals type movie, I thought it was good for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was engaging. I have seen Gladiator. It was probably when it first came out, so I've not gone back and rewatched it. But I remember it being memorable and also more epic. There is a sense of this movie, the second Gladiator, Gladiator 2, that it's like, hey, let's try it again.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go at it again.
One more time from the top.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, you almost got there. But they come across as like just maybe overly orchestrated too.
Yeah.
There was something about that it just there was a hint of that, like, okay, that we see what you're doing here and it's pretty obvious. But it was entertaining. I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah. There were some flashbacks or clips from the original which, you know, brought a certain character to it. And actually the same actress, this is 20 years between movies here, right? So the same actress from the original reprised her role in this one.
Sure.
So kind of interesting continuity. Yeah.
But spoiler, he becomes the emperor. So he moves from slave gladiator to the top. So he's achieved all of what it means to be a gladiator. So
that's
why he's gladiatored.
All that it means to gladiator, he has gladiatored.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. What have you seen recently?
Yeah, the one movie that we saw together recently was A Real Pain. It hasn't had a huge release. There were only a few movie theaters that we could watch it in. It's a Jesse Eisenberg film that he actually stars in with Kieran Culkin.
Yep.
It is a real pain. So they are two cousins. There's not a lot of movies about cousins. You see movies about siblings, but this a pair of cousins whose grandmother was a part of the Holocaust in Germany, who recently passed away, that she was really a foundational figure for both of them. And it's a real pain that you experience how they've received the pain of their grandmother, maybe in ways that are clear and ways that aren't as clear, and maybe the ways that they've disassociated from her experience, that was something that just happened and they've forgotten about. And so they go to Germany to go to the sites, to go to the concentration camps.
I think they go to Poland. Sorry, I meant to jump in.
Oh, do they go to Poland?
Poland? Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes. And so they go, that's correct. Yeah, they go to Poland and with like on a tour company, right. And they experience that real pain and also just the back and forth between the cousins, that the Kieran Culkin character is a real pain as well. Kind of just very eccentric character that's led to a lot of chaos within the family. And yeah, so how they face the reality of the experience of their grandmother, they face their own trauma and sufferings that they've experienced in their life, how they learn to meet one another, and even, yeah, love one another towards the end without really any huge kind of catharsis that happens for both of them, but there's a piece that happens towards the end. It was a very interesting film.
Yeah, I thought it was very well written. I think, I mean, the word real is what comes to mind, like just the experience of this family dealing with this family trauma and dealing with the realization of what their grandmother and their relatives in Poland had gone through as Jews in the time of the Second World War. And yeah, just the healing that they're kind of looking for and the relationship between these cousins that, like you said at the end, sort of they do find some respect and more love for each other kind of from going through this. And yeah, I think there was just like a real, just the quality of realness about the movie that I thought was interesting in the writing and in the acting. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And all the music was from Chopin. That's how I knew it was set in Poland.
That's correct. Yeah, so. Yes. And yeah, that was something that a couple of years ago I realized that Chopin, you imagine him to be some sort of French composer, yeah. But he's Polish.
Polish.
Yeah.
Very proud. Proudly Polish.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's probably worth mentioning is we tried to go way back and watch a classic movie. We watched Nosferatu recently.
Yes. Nosferatu coming out.
That's right.
Soon.
So we're kind of maybe possibly getting ready for that. But the classic silent black and white from the 20s? When is that? When is the original
Probably,
Nosferatu?
Yeah. Let's say and the 20s. It's the only horror movie on the Vatican film list.
Yeah, it's on the Vatican film list. This movie about, it's basically an adaptation of the Dracula, the vampire story, mm-hmm. with set in kind of a German town or setting.
Is it Poland?
I think this one actually, I think, was Germany or German.
Okay.
Nice. He brought it back, folks. Yeah, I enjoyed it because I watched it. Father Matt fell asleep. So do you have anything to say for yourself?
It was late at night. And it was a silent film.
That you suggested watching.
I did.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to go back and watch.
Okay. So you do need to watch it because it's a classic.
What were your thoughts about the movie?
I was mainly just very perturbed by it, the snoring and your... No, I'm kidding. No. No, I thought it was, you know, for an old movie and a silent movie, the score obviously plays a big part of it. The suspense is built, you know, through the ways that the vampire is depicted and the havoc he's... wreaking on the town and stuff. I mean, there was a lot of interesting elements to it that tell a story very effectively in a very different way the movies are made now. So I think as a piece of art, you know, a piece of film, it's, I appreciate it. I don't know that I have to see it again, but you have to see it again because you didn't see it the first time.
Yes.
So
I need to.
Yeah. But
it was
yeah.
easy enough. We streamed it. So
there you
I
go.
Still have access to it. And in thinking about the Vatican, that's a great segue.
Yeah.
The Vatican film list. This episode is about the Vatican, that there was a movie that has come out very recently, directed by Edward Berger, called Conclave, based on a book. It's about the Vatican. There's been a lot of responses to this movie. For us and for this podcast, I think it's important that there's ability to respond to to really what this movie was. I wouldn't say that it portrays the church in a positive light whatsoever, right? There's been a lot of very negative response from the movie. And I think, it's important that we can speak into some of those concerns about Conclave. That I think it's important to say on the onset that this movie covers a few sensitive topics that maybe if you're listening to the podcast with the rest of the family, just to be discerning about what we discuss in the movie. We'll discuss the more controversial aspects towards the end of the podcast. We'll begin with just more of a general overview of the movie and our discussion about the different elements of the movie, which ultimately lead to the final discussion. So just to be aware at the onset, and also we're not really for this movie and all the movies that we talk about, we want to discover and discuss the interplay between faith and cinema. And sometimes, that interplay is not very strong or it is negative, right? And so this isn't an endorsement of this film, right? And it's not an endorsement of any of the films we really talk about unless we do endorse them. But I think it's an important film about the church that's worth having really a clear response to.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I think a lot of our listeners and maybe in our own ministry, like people in the pews, have either seen it or have questions about it. So I think it's good for us to be able to acknowledge. Yeah, it definitely has a plot that's sensational in some aspects. It definitely pushes the envelope in certain areas, so we'll get into some of that. But it's good to look at it from a faith perspective and see what is there that's worth discussing and what would be, more problematic at the outset.
And the plot of the movie is pretty easy to figure out. It's called Conclave. So conclave comes from the Latin word conclave, which means with key, for the time after a pope dies or resigns. There is a conclave, the gathering of all the cardinals across the world who are who are the electors who are under the age of 80, who are eligible to vote. They're locked in the Vatican, right, with key, especially when they go and vote in the Sistine Chapel. And so it's a story of the Pope has died and the cardinals gather and they begin to plan for the election. And then we see the election as it plays out, and they elect the new Pope. And so that's the general plot of the movie. And I think in one sense, I think it is important to recognize for how the church is depicted in film. There is something interesting about this film that often in some of the movies that we see how there's mass and it doesn't really make sense what's going on, or just some anachronisms that are at play.
Yeah.
And I would say for this film, generally, I think they did do their research in a lot of ways. Sometimes the cassocks don't look right, or there's just some things that are creative decisions that you're thinking, well, maybe it didn't exactly look like that or shouldn't look like that. But for the most part, it did really seem like real cardinals and the Vatican itself, that I'm sure all of that was on a soundstage,
right?
But they were able to recreate it in an accurate way, and I think first they did do their homework in
right.
a lot of ways.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that I think that comes across, like you said, certainly the scenery and the costumes and some of the writing about when the cardinals gather for times of prayer, who like is
sure.
preaching at a certain
yeah.
liturgy leading up to these things. It certainly seems like they tried to pull back the veil and give a little bit of a view through the window of these things that are happening. And they did it in a way that they were, I think they were striving for accuracy as much as they can, even though there are some things about, we'll get into this in a second,
sure.
I'm sure, about, different, the characters of different cardinals or how different cardinals are depicted. They were certainly trying to.
Yeah. Yeah. So just in that sense, it was interesting,
right.
I guess, to be able to see something that normally we wouldn't see. It did seem like a lot of those elements were fairly accurate in terms of even just where the cardinals eat in between and what their rooms look like. I think a lot of that was attempting to be fairly accurate to what it actually is like. Above that, we realize very early on that the dynamics that are leading to the conclave are for the sake of really who can win, right? It's a battle for power.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the big headlines in the trailers beforehand, right? That it's a war, right? And you get that sense from the very beginning that it isn't just a bunch of cardinals coming together to discern the will of the Holy Spirit and vote, but it is an all-out war and battle for power, really from every single character from the beginning to the end, right? Everyone has an agenda that they want to accomplish. That in thinking about this movie, we talked, one of the first movies we discussed was Dune,
right.
Dune 1 and 2. And this is basically Dune in cassocks, right? that nobody is virtuous. Nobody has any sort of redeeming value. They just want to be the ones on top, or their agendas to be what eventually is on top. And so the church is, St. Paul says, we hold these mysteries in earthen vessels, right? That the mysteries of God, the sacramental life of the church, the truth of the gospel is held in earthen vessels, our own broken humanity. There is corruption and brokenness within the church and leaders of the church and within our own hearts, right? We have to recognize that first and foremost. So I don't think it's accurate to say that there isn't any personal dynamics that go into something like the conclave or a conclave. But also faith is much more than just trying to battle for power and be the one that ultimately takes the reins at the end of the day, right? And I don't think that is accurate in that sense, right? I'm sure as cardinals gather, right, there's agendas that they want to accomplish. That not everyone is perfect, but there is a desire to be open to the Holy Spirit, that realizing this is a sacred duty that the cardinals are entering into. But that definitely is not present in the film. And one of the agendas that is battled for from the very beginning is doubt over certainty.
Right.
I guess one of the anachronisms that was present is they gathered for a gathering, I don't know what else to call it, before the conclave where they're all wearing vestments.
Oh, yeah.
That is the case, that there is usually another cardinal who preaches to the other cardinals before the conclave. There is also usually a mass in St. Peter's Basilica. But this was, they were wearing vestments, but it wasn't a mass. There was no altar.
Mm.
So that was a little bit like, what is actually going on here? They were just in an open room wearing vestments, but not
from a screenplay perspective. They're trying to get the Ralph Fiennes character, this cardinal.
Yes.
I think he's an English cardinal, right?
Yes.
Thomas, I think is his name. They're trying to, you know, get him to have a homily be delivered about, like you said, faith and doubt. So they kind of have to shoehorn this into a different context. You know a lot about where these liturgies take place and who's at. I mean, you did your homework too, like the people who wrote Conclave.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed.
Look at the, remember the news of when that stuff happened.
Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes' character, he is he's an American cardinal or British cardinal who is the dean of the College of Cardinals. So during the interregnum, during the time Sede Vacante before the new pope, a lot of the authority passes to the dean, essentially just authority to plan the conclave
right.
and make sure that happens, not any actual authority. Like maybe if he has to call someone to tell the garbage man to pick up the trash, he would do that.
That was a deleted scene. That wasn't depicted
in
the film.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And so he is the one who leads the whole effort, and part of that is this homily that has at the very beginning where he says what they really need is a pope who doubts, right? And that really becomes the agenda of himself and really the theme of most of the movie, that what is the enemy? What is the worst possible thing in the life of the church is certainty.
Certainty.
Right. Which is, you know, ludicrous, right? Mm. That like the faith is not just a gathering of people who want to do nice things together. We come together because we have certainty about the truth of the gospel.
Yeah.
There is the real content of faith. And that's completely lost from the very beginning of this movie. And so we have Cardinal Lawrence Ray Fiennes' character, who is the dean of the College of Cardinals. And it becomes an all-out war from the very beginning of seeking to which factions, the traditionalists, the liberals, who is going to end up winning. Yeah, what did you think about the movie?
I thought that the way that the different characters are depicted, yeah, it certainly seems to be there is a sensational quality to it, right? Like they're trying to really show these power dynamics behind the scenes. And I don't know if the words of his homily, I'd have to go back and read him again, but I mean, yeah, the sense that there's this interplay between faith and doubt, and he's obviously trying to highlight more of the doubt piece of it. And I think the response to it would be, as you say, that the truth of the faith, like we refer to it as the deposit of faith, like what's been handed on to us. There's mm-hmm. a sense of handing on faithfully what we have received. That's mm-hmm. that's even Paul's own language, right, about Eucharistic traditions or something, let's say, like in the New Testament. So there is a sense of the leaders of the church are stewards. They hand on these mysteries, hopefully faithfully. These things of like power and authority, it doesn't come to the forefront when you necessarily think about how the faith is transmitted. And so I think the movie kind of pits those against each other probably a little more. Again, just to draw those lines, it's very black and white in the movie, like who's the good guys and the bad guys, right? Like they're trying to depict that there's cardinals that are power hungry, and then there's, I guess, maybe, I don't know if you really do see anybody that's more of just of a spiritual nature. You're right. It is kind of just battlefronts, like stalemate almost the whole mm-hmm. time, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say that the response really is, we don't doubt in and of itself is not a good, right? Mm-hmm. The Lord desires to bring us to faith, which is a certainty, that love is not about just ideas, but the reality of that we have been loved and we want to give of ourselves in love.
Right.
This is a real thing. And so, yeah, like you said, the deposit of faith, the content of faith that we do accept. What I think the kind of modern perspective is that doubt is a good thing because we're not perfect, right? And I'd say the Christian response to that is not so much that doubt is the good thing, but humility is the That's Christian virtue.
Much better way to say it, yeah.
That we would say, we would want a pope, not who doubts, but a pope that is humble, that's able to admit, oh, I'm wrong, right? Or I don't fully understand this, and I'd like to really seek what the truth is, right? And so that's something I think foundationally disjointed for this film. And there's a sense, really, that will tie into our final discussion, but the discussion about the faith is really just a discussion about externals. It's not really a discussion about anything that's more deep and more profound, more internal, right? It's just merely externals.
It's a good way to say it at this juncture. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the point that it seems like nobody really is good, that it tries at the very beginning to portray Ray Fiennes' character and the Stanley Tucci's character, who plays a liberal Italian cardinal, as the white knights who are trying to really have this more progressive vision for the church. And they're kind of held up as leaders as opposed to the villains who are, there's an Italian cardinal, Cardinal Tedesco, and an African cardinal, Cardinal Adeyemi, who are portrayed as like the stalwarts who are moving in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And for each of those circumstances, they're trying to have this powerful, the traditionalists are trying to have this power play on the other cardinals. And the others are just, you know, very sincere. But even Stanley Tucci's character, he seems as if like, he is, has no real ambition, that he's,
right.
he's completely sincere, that he'll accept it if he's given it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And then we realize that he was, in a conspiracy with one of the other cardinals, played by John Lithgow, who worked at the Vatican, but he was a part of this really corrupt deal that Stanley Tucci's character was saying, if he becomes Pope, it'll all disappear, mm-hmm. right? And so he's orchestrating things as well, right? And then really the protagonist of the movie, Ray Fiennes, that he pretends he just wants to avoid any responsibility and to step away from the limelight.
Right.
And there's this little interplay between Stanley Tucci and Ray Fiennes about every cardinal that goes in the conclave already has a name picked
yeah,
out.
Everybody wants it. Yeah, everybody wants it.
When a pope is elected, they choose their papal name, a new name. And Ray Fiennes kind of demurs and pretends like he doesn't. But then he's asked directly, what would your name be? John. He knows it immediately without any question. So he has an intention as well, right?
Yeah.
And then even, so the more interesting character, controversial character, that right before the conclave, they find out there's a cardinal in pectore. You've heard of this.
Yeah, this idea that the Holy Father kind of in secret, or how would you, what's the best translation for that? Yeah, in secret he makes.
Like in pectore, I believe, means like to the chest.
Yeah.
Like he holds it within his heart
that
he names a cardinal without promulgating it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's secret, and this is something that has happened even
right.
more recently. I think John Paul II had a few cardinals that he named in pectore and then eventually promulgated. Even before the Archbishop of Shanghai during Pope John Paul II was named a cardinal in pectore, but then eventually when he came to the Vatican several years later, he was actually told by the Pope that he was named a cardinal. It was already in effect at that point.
Mm.
One of the anachronisms that's present is that when a cardinal is named in pectore, so just the Pope holding it to his chest, they don't receive any of the rights of cardinals until it's promulgated, until it's made public.
And there might be all sorts of reasons, like you said, that the Holy Father would do this other path to make someone a cardinal.
Yes.
There might be a reason for not making it public, but this wouldn't play into then, like you're saying, all the things that would unfold in the conclave. Like, would a person that's a cardinal in pectore, would they be on the list? Would they be on the guest list?
Yes, no, they would not be on the list. They would not be invited to the Vatican. They wouldn't be able to get to the Vatican, or they wouldn't be able to just walk into the conclave.
Right.
So that's what happens, that there's this cardinal who is he's a Mexican priest, a Mexican archbishop, who is assigned as the archbishop in Afghanistan, in the Middle East.
Yep.
And he just looks like a simple priest coming to the conclave, and he kind of presents a letter. Something that I did hear in the book right before the Pope died, the previous Pope in this movie, he did change the laws for papal elections so that an in pectore cardinal would be eligible. But even in that, there needs to be some sort of verification.
Like, right.
Can they check a book that the Pope kept and say, okay, it's also recorded here. Like, anybody can't just show up and say, listen, I received this letter. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And so within that, too, it's clear that the Pope was, before he died, is also
pulling the strings.
The strings.
Right.
And
trying to skew things in a certain direction, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting this different personalities and the different temperaments or the different philosophies or stances of these cardinals. Yeah, and like this in pectore cardinal, what's his name in the movie? I can't think of his name.
Cardinal Benitez.
Thank you, Benitez. You kind of know from the beginning that he is going to play a significant role. Like, he's maybe this sort of dark horse candidate.
Yes.
That I think at the first ballot, doesn't he get like a vote or two?
Yes.
And other guys get way more votes. So you're wondering,
it's like the recency bias, like the last person you thought about, like, maybe we should think of him.
Yeah, they just introduced him at dinner. Like,
they just
I
introduced him
vote.
And then he gets votes.
But But you kind of can sense as the movie is unfolding that these other cardinals, it starts to crumble around them, all these factions and all these backroom deals. And he starts to emerge a little bit as the, like, I don't know, as a compromise probably isn't the right way to say it, but like a unifying candidate. Maybe that's the way to say it.
But you see throughout the film that the corruption of each of the other cardinals, the cardinal from Africa, you find out has an illegitimate child.
Yeah, so he's out of the running for that.
Yeah, the cardinal who, John Lithgow's character, who was an heir apparent, that he's part of this whole scandal.
Right.
And then you find out also that Stanley Tucci's character was a part of that as well. That each of them are discredited. There actually is like a literal terrorist attack that happens outside of the conclave. And so there's this chaos that's at play.
Right.
And they're just arguing and screaming amongst one another. What does the church need? And that whole dynamic of liberal, conservative, traditionalist, progressive, it's just not how that discussion ever takes place. Mm. Like, it seemed very artificial. And like they were sitting there arguing. And then Cardinal Benitez, this new cardinal, stands up and offers this perspective of, listen, I've been in different war-torn countries. I've served the poor. That we just need to work for peace and not either, you know, be concerned about just conserving things of the past for their own sake, or you know, just having our own agenda. So he seems as like this true good candidate, right? That eventually does become successful, right?
He does get elected.
And so this leads into the real controversy of the film, that he's eventually elected, and he chooses the papal name.
Innocent. He takes
right?
the name Innocent, which we've had a few Pope Innocents before. I don't know if they were all innocent themselves, but they took the name. Yeah.
And something that we found out beforehand, that for Ralph Fiennes, Cardinal Lawrence Thomas.
The cardinal who is the one to first propose the idea of doubt as a counterpart to faith is named Thomas. So you get this little doubting Thomas reference here. At least that's how I took it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And one of those doubts is who this Cardinal Benitez is.
Right.
That we realize, oh, well, he's gaining a lot of traction, right, and he eventually is elected. So he has this kind of mission on the side, working with different figures from the Secretary of State to research and to give some background about Cardinal Benitez that isn't ever responded to until after the new pope is elected. And what you find out is that that Cardinal Benitez, before the conclave, in conversation with the previous pope, was going to step down as archbishop because he was scheduled for a hysterectomy, that he was biologically a woman, and that he was trying to change that so that he could still serve as a priest, because he was intersex, that it was unclear what his sex was, and so he had, you know, both male and female parts, and that he told the Pope, I'm going to resign, or I'm going to have this surgery. And the previous Pope said, no, you're not going to do that. You should cancel it, and you should still remain on as Archbishop. And they find this out right after the conclave. So after a Pope is elected, they go to the Room of Tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you sort of think that the way the movie is progressing is that the big twist at the end is going to be that the unlikely candidate, this Cardinal Benitez, is elected. But then in the last, 5 minutes?
Yes.
All this other stuff comes out about all this behind-the-scenes stuff that the previous Pope knew and that we're just starting to learn now. So it becomes very hectic and frantic at the end, and you're trying to, as an audience member, you're trying to judge, okay, this is what this has been about all along, is to get this character in the spotlight, in the limelight here, so to speak, right? Yeah.
And I guess the book has been fairly popular, but I wasn't familiar. I didn't look up the plot of the book beforehand. And this is what happens in the book, but in the theater, there was audible gasps.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. When that was discovered, and so what is the response in a situation like that? Originally, Cardinal Lawrence Ralph Fiennes is very upset with Cardinal Benitez that he says this is a lie, essentially. But then he accepts it, and this is really the culmination of what he wants. This kind of ambiguous little category that seems to leave room for doubt.
For leave room for doubt, which is what what he's introduced in the beginning as kind of his his ideal.
And ultimately that the externals don't matter, or the externals are all that matter, right. The internals don't matter at all. And so I think it's important to be able to speak into this clearly, that what is the church's response, especially with the idea of what it means to be intersex. There was a really great article that I read by Abigail Favale called The Intersex Body is a Revelation, right? That there is the reality of ambiguous genitalia, where it's unclear to discern the sex immediately. Abigail Favale makes clear that, okay, each and every person is created in God's image and likeness. The church is clear about the importance of the body, right? And each body speaks truth, right? And also something that isn't ever spoken about, that about intersex individuals, is that intersex is not a third thing that exists,
right.
But really it is a subcategory of male or female, right? That there is no real understanding that intersex is some third thing. Also, if you look at some of the statistics about individuals who would identify as intersex, there are often the statistic that's given is as many as 1.7% of the population, right? So not a huge number of people. However, it's something that sure exists, and it's a reality that you have to acknowledge. But if you take that a step further, the percentage of people that are in a category like Cardinal Benitez, where it is difficult, if not, difficult at first to be able to discern the gender, is an incredibly, incredibly small number of people that really is 0.018% of the human population. So something that does exist, where it's difficult to immediately discern the gender at birth, right? And so what is the church's response in these circumstances, right? That he said that when he was in seminary, he didn't think that there was, she didn't feel like there was anything different about herself or the other seminarians that were there at the time, right? It appears as a male, right? But in these circumstances, there is the fundamental truth that was made clear in the article that in every single person, there are only one set of gametes, right? And so for women, the gametes are eggs. For a man, the gametes are sperm, right? And even in all of these intersex males or females, right, they still only have one set of gametes, male or female, right? There is no in between, right? And so in a circumstance like this individual, this woman, there was never that attempt to discern reverently what the actual gender was. And instead, sometimes there's surgical things that can be done to affirm one gender or another, without really discerning what, essentially, how is this person fertile one way or the other?
Right,
right,
right. And this is something in the world of the movie, in the universe, let's say, that the movie sets up. This is something that the cardinal character has known all along. I mean, there's a sense of, it's why, I mean, the sense that he picks the name Innocent when he has this.
Yeah.
This secret or this controversy around him It just makes his character, like you said, ambiguous. Just not even on this, not level of gender, but just even on his, like, where his moral compass is, or what he's
dishonest,
he's, yeah,
uninnocent,
right? Yeah,
I mean, like, she goes into the conclave and lies from the very beginning, right? And hides her identity from the very beginning. So again, it's fighting for power, even for this person that seems to be the real, you know, white knight or whatever. Mm. But they also are, she also is lying and deceptive from the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this isn't like a third category that the church just says, I don't know what to do. And there is just an area of doubt that we should just kind of wonder about. But there is still clarity.
That's a good way to put it.
About gender, right? That there is a fundamental difference of what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman. And that's a good thing, right? And that for individuals who where that can be difficult to discern, which is an incredibly small number of the human population, 0.018, right? There's still a way forward to be able to discern that by affirming the dignity of the body.
Yeah. And as we John Paul II gives us the great teaching known as theology of the body, and this sense that the body reveals the person, the body speaks a language. So we talk about being dishonest or being deceitful. You know, there is ways of even doing that with our own bodies because of how the body is so constructed and how God has made us, as we say in his image and likeness, to communicate the truth of who we are and who he is and the relationship that we have with our brothers and sisters and with him, with God as Father. So all that stuff comes up very quickly, right, at the last few minutes of the movie because it's so difficult to discern, and so many characters have not discerned up until that point the reality or the implications of all of this.
Yeah. And so if we were to speak about Seeds of the Word, what would you say?
I think as a movie, I'm trying to remember what I even rated it when we saw it. I really didn't mind it that much. I mean, I agree with you, though, the power struggles and the things that reminded us of the Dune movie. But it was just at the extra twist at the very end, I think just makes it more about being provocative or being, I mean, the book's probably 20 years old, but this is the same plot. So the same idea has been with us obviously for a while. But it just, I think it discredits a lot of what the movie was perhaps trying to accomplish and just leaves it so ambiguous in the end as to what the future of this individual will be or leadership in the church.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a whole lot there that's redeeming.
Yeah, I think the argument fails in the end, right? Yeah. That it's just not.
Because it's based on a false premise,
yes,
right? You could say,
exactly.
I mean, to take it logically. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of Seeds of the Word, I don't know if we can give zero seeds. I don't think there was much that was redeeming. If we can only give one, then I'll give one. But one thing that is interesting is it does show that there is some sort of fascination with the church.
Right. Yeah, that's
and the
interesting
life of
point.
The church and presenting that accurately. But the church is more than just, people gathered for the sense of trying to establish power and just, but there's something fundamental, internal, deep that is true, right? And so the fact that there's at least a fascination with the church is interesting. I wouldn't give it any other additional seeds.
I agree with that. Dune had a sequel. There was Dune and Duner. Is there going to be a sequel to Conclave and Conclaver?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Or I actually thought about
all
this when you were
sequels.
Talking before. If you wanted, you
there
could
will
maybe
be a sequel. I mean, there will be additional conclaves. But.
You can maybe blend the two genres together. You could do Cassics on Arrakis or something. I don't know. I was trying to think of a way.
There you go.
That would be the way of putting them both together. But
well, I think this was a helpful discussion.
Yeah, thanks for that, Matt.
And
thanks for doing the research
to speak
there, too.
Into this. Yeah, I would definitely encourage someone to check out Abigail Favale's article, The Intersex Body is a Revelation.
Beautiful.
Very important. Yep. So in conclusion, I thought we didn't have a game. We haven't had a game in a while.
I took it easy on you in our last episode. I was trying to let your have a little bit of mental rest and reprieve from the trivia, or
but
the
no
trivial,
more.
You might say.
But no more.
But no more.
And often what I usually say is for all of these games, Father Brian puts me on the spot and just it's testing what Father Matt doesn't know. So We are having another game that I don't have a name for the game, except Cardinals in Film. That the reality of Conclave, you see a lot of Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, there are a lot of very famous movies that have Cardinals, that idea of fascination with the church. How much do you know about Cardinals in Film?
I'm a little worried because, as I said earlier in the episode, you know, you've done your research. You know a lot about the Vatican and the behind the scenes and these conclave things. And then you also know a lot about movies. So I'm afraid I might embarrass myself for the listeners, but I'll pray for humility.
So my thought is I'm going to tell you the name of the cardinal in the film. And also, I want to make all of these are Academy Award nominees at the very least.
Okay, that's helpful.
So I'll tell you what they were nominated for.
Okay, you'll tell me what the movie was nominated for,
yes,
or the actor.
And if you need extra hints, maybe I can give you extra hints as we go through this. So there's six of them.
And I'm answering with the name of a movie.
I need the name of the movie.
Okay, just want to make sure.
I'm not going to tell you the name of the movie.
Okay.
First, so this cardinal was named Stephen Cardinal Fairmoyle, I won't tell you the date. I'll tell you the date if you need it. The movie itself was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including director, cinematography, and costume design. I'll tell you the date. It's in 1963. What was this movie about a cardinal called?
I do not recognize the name of that cardinal as a character, so I'm just taking a shot in the dark based on the date, and I might even embarrass
it's
myself
about
here.
About a cardinal.
Yeah. There is a movie called The Cardinal, right?
Ding, ding, ding. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So that name, I'm just trying to think of the nationality of that name. Is he American in that movie?
He's Irish.
He's Irish. Okay. Yes. I've seen parts of it. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Yes. So the first one is The Cardinal.
And sorry, what did that win for? Because I don't remember.
It didn't win for anything.
Oh, but it was nominated. I see. Okay, because yes. I don't remember hearing that was like a phenomenal movie, but that maybe it had some merits to it for a nomination.
And
okay.
For these others, you're going to have less time to answer.
Okay.
Oh, that was the hardest.
Sorry.
Thank you. This one, well, because you're going to probably get this. So the next movie that came out in 1966 was nominated for 8 Academy Awards, won 6 of them, including Best Picture, Director, Actor, and Screenplay. You can jump in at any point.
But I'm waiting for the name.
It was okay.
And the Cardinal's name. Right?
The Cardinal's name was Cardinal Wolsey.
That has got to be one of my favorite movies of all time. You can watch it in season and out of season.
Yes.
It's a man for all seasons.
Yes. A man for all seasons. Yes.
Oh, those opening 10 minutes with Orson Welles and Paul Scholes. I mean, I just watch that. The Cardinal Wolsey scene is just incredible.
Okay. You ready for the next one?
Thank you for that one.
Okay. This was nominated for 7 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. I don't believe it won any of them. The Cardinal's name was Cardinal Lamberto.
Hmm. Cardinal Lamberto.
I can give you the director if you need it.
Give me the director, please.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh, okay, but which one? The Godfather Part 3?
Correct.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, that is correct. Okay.
What was just one more time the cardinal's name, because I would not have known it.
Cardinal Lamberto.
Lamberto.
Played by the actor Ralph Valoni. And so the next film, it was nominated for 7 Academy Awards. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematographer. It came out in 1986, and the cardinal's name was Cardinal Altamirano. What was the film?
1986? Altamirano.
Yes. 7 Academy Awards. It won Best Cinematography.
I have no idea.
Is the film I Like?
Oh. Then really?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I Like a lot.
I know, but I'm thinking of when we did the episode on your favorite movies.
It's one of my top films.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I would never guess Life is Beautiful or Babette's Feast for
no,
you,
no,
so I
no.
have to like think in the deep recesses
it's
of my
It's literally
mind.
The next one. It's my number 3 favorite movie of all time.
Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I do not know.
The Cardinal was a former Jesuit. Jesuits. Lots of Jesuits.
Oh, the Mission?
The Mission.
You know what's throwing me off is when you're saying the date that it came out, sometimes I'm thinking that that's when it's set. So, yes. I mean, obviously the mission is set yes. well before 1986.
Yes. Okay. Before the Academy Awards.
And before, yeah. Before there yes. was an Academy.
There was, yes.
Okay. Sorry. The mission. Thank you. The mission. Jeremy Irons and...
You still said it. Yeah, Jeremy Irons. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Robert you. De Niro.
Yeah.
Okay. The next film. This was nominated for only 3 Academy Awards. It came out, including Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay. It was directed by Fernando Meirelles. And the Cardinals, you're going to guess it as soon as I say. Do you have any guesses?
I have 2 films that I have in reserve that I'm hoping are on this list.
I'll give you the year. 2019.
But you're not going to give me the Cardinals' name?
One was one of the Cardinals was from Germany.
The two popes?
Yes, yes, yes. Cardinal Ratzinger, Cardinal okay. Bergoglio. Yeah.
Oh, see, you've gone in a different direction with some of these. I wouldn't have. I have 2. Is there one more?
There's one more.
Okay, I have 2 movies.
I can only think of one more. I think I got most of them that were nominated for Academy Awards.
Oh, that's the other parameter.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Continue.
Okay, so this last one, hopefully it'll be the one that you're thinking. It was nominated for 11 Academy Awards, and it won one category, which was Best Screenplay Based on Material from Another Medium, which became Best Adapted Screenplay. The Cardinal's name was Cardinal Zambelli.
Oh, see, I don't know.
I don't have the director.
Did you say what year it was?
1964.
Oh. I'm gonna say Shoes of the Fisherman, because that's the one I was hoping you were going to have on this list.
No, I don't think that was nominated for an Academy.
Oh, okay, so that's why I didn't make it.
It starred Richard Burton and Peter O'Toole.
Beckett.
Beckett.
Thank you.
Great.
Wow.
You did great.
I did all right. I'm a cardinal.
You got them all eventually.
I'm a cardinal deacon. I'm not a cardinal priest or a cardinal bishop. I scored lowest cardinal deacon.
Ah, yes. There you go. Oh, I should have done that. That's a good idea. Yeah, cardinal deacon.
I was thinking Shoes of the Fisherman might be on there and Agony and the Ecstasy, but maybe those didn't fall into your other parameter
yeah.
of Oscar.
I don't think they were Oscar nominees.
I got it. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Great. Well, thank you.
Awesome Bowman. Conversation.
This
thanks for
an important conversation.
Yep. Thanks.
Also, as we've mentioned, we want to hear your feedback. Please email us at our email address, which is cinema@aod.org. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Cinema Verbi. You can find more episodes on unleashthegospel.org, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll catch you next time.
Cut. Print. That's a wrap.